it's so difficult now for people, even young gay people, to understand how terrifying this was. At first, no one knew what caused it.
They were blaming it on things like poppers. They were blaming it on drugs.
Is it semen itself, which was one rumor being floated? It's certain kinds of lubricant.
People were saying that it was airborne, that it was mosquito-borne, that you could get it from swimming in a pool with someone who was infected.
They were blaming it on anything they could think of in terms of blaming the people who had it. These were the people who didn't have it. And they would say, well, that's because he stayed out all night and he took poppers, he took drugs and so on. And then the next thing you know, these very people who were putting down their gay companions discovered they had it too. And it grew from there.
Already people were having the experience of knowing people who were developing strange symptoms. People were beginning to have, wasting diseases and starting to have these unusual infectious diseases. The problem with all that was, that the disease was much more widespread by that time, but people didn't know it. And nobody knew anything about long-term survival, and there was no effective treatment and so on. And everyone assumed that you might live a few years at best, and that we would all be looking at sort of the same fate. But it was all... dancing in the dark, sort of.
Almost immediately, a wedge formed between the neighboring communities of Cherry Grove and the Pines in their response to the outbreak.
In the Pines, my sense is that the community was much more proactive, that pretty early on, there was more facing it head on, more community mobilization.
There were people who were being very vocal about, this is an emergency, this is really major, don't ignore this, it's going to cost you your life. And some of those people were called Cassandras, but the problem is, Cassandra was right. And that's exactly what happened.
People in the Grove at first just tried to pretend it wasn't happening. Nobody wanted to hear about it. It was so frightening that people just hid in their houses and wouldn't even admit that they were sick.
But what to do about it and how to talk about it, it sort of ran counter to what Fire Island meant to people. Fire Island had meant celebration, had meant freedom, had meant sexual adventure, had meant a lot of things that were now suddenly being challenged.
A lot of people would not admit they were sick. They didn't even want to admit to themselves they were sick.
For example, I had one interviewee who was constantly sick and had these high fevers and stuff. And every time I would meet him, he would say, I have an advanced case of Lyme disease. It wasn't. But he didn't want to tell me or anyone.
When you have a sort of group grief situation going on and a group denial at the same time and a group reality, all those things intersecting all the time, it really depended on the character of who you were talking to.
There was no consciousness about, oh, we're doing too many drugs, or we're doing this, or we're doing that. So a lot of people just self-medicated themselves through the whole crisis on Fire Island.
In terms of the sexual behavior, so much of that behavior is driven by unconscious motivation and by, then again, fueled by drugs and alcohol, that people aren't making rational decisions. And in fact, might be, if they're very, very fearful or have the notion that they're looking death in the face, they're more likely to act out and to do something that at some level might be life-affirming, like having sex with lots of people or something like that.
We all were aware that things were starting to happen, but I still think people had their heads in the sand and didn't want to face what was going on. So you go to Fire Island, the place where we escape from the world, and a lot of people escape from that reality as well. Sadly enough, not for long.
...1984 was at the beginning of the worst period in the Grove and the Pines.
For me, Fire Island became ghostly. Like, I would go there and I would see ghosts walking up and down the boardwalk, and I would walk by somebody's house and go, oh, that's where so-and-so lives, and I went to that wonderful party that he threw, and, or, you know, all the memories come rushing back.
You could not feel sad when you were walking down the boardwalk and you saw somebody that you had seen in New York City the year before who was totally vital, and now they were walking down the boardwalk with an IV pole rattling behind them.
You'd see someone or you'd hear someone, and this got worse and worse and worse as the years went on, you know, where you couldn't deny. When you'd see some young person that you maybe had sex with last year or knew their boyfriend in a wheelchair with sarcoma all over them, and they were less than 30 years of age.
You would go to somebody's house one day, and you would go to their house the next weekend and find out they were dead.
People were dying. I mean, you'd have 4 or 5 funerals a week. It was just horrible. You never even had time to grieve for one person before someone else had died. And it could have been an old boyfriend, or it could have been someone you didn't like, or someone you had a fight with. And then all those unresolved feelings were, you know, being stuffed down.
A lot of the memories I just don't want to remember. I don't want to remember the people dying out there when there were no doctors to support them. You know, it's not really the island where there's great medical care. You know, it's sort of like going camping. So if you're going out there and you need a lot of support, you don't have much luck.
You had to take the ferry. There was no other way to get out there. And you'd see the people getting on the ferry that maybe were hidden in the houses that weren't out on the beach. You know, you'd see them in different stages of dying. And at one point, people didn't want to go to Cherry Grove or the Pines anymore.
When I first started going out to Fire Island, one of the most exciting things for me was to experience the meat rack, because I had heard all this stuff about, you know, this wild anonymous sex place with all this stuff, and I was so excited. So when I got out there, I went for a walk, and there was no one there. There was no one there. And I walked through, and I couldn't figure it out because I saw these piles of ashes. And I still really didn't connect the two. Like, there wasn't this immediate connection. And then finally, I stumbled across this pile of ashes, like, up on the hill, and there was a note. And it said, like, in memory of Joe, who wanted his ashes scattered at this spot because this is where he met Henry. And in hindsight, when I look back, there were so many ashes that it was harrowing.
We would carry urns of ashes and dump them in the ocean, and we would sprinkle them through the meat rack, and we would bring them all, you know, any place that was a favorite haunt of a particular friend, we would spread a little bit of his ashes around.
You know, all the gay people wanted to die on Fire Island. They had such great memories of it. It was sort of like they wanted to go back to the motherland, like a pilgrimage back to times that were better and happier and freer.